Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Pennsylvania Democrats head to the polls in 2 weeks, and the wide lead Hillary Clinton once enjoyed there appears to be shrinking. Still, Barack Obama is having trouble attracting the Reagan Democrats either candidate may need to beat John McCain in the fall. In this hour, what's important to Pennsylvania voters and what that Keystone State can tell us about the rest of the country? Joining me in the studio, Ron Elving of National Public Radio, Amy Liu of the Brookings Institution, and Michael Sokolov. He's contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine. Throughout the hour, we'll have your calls as part of the program. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning, Diane.
Ron Elving, if I could start with you, what do the latest polls tell us about the Clinton-Obama matchup in Pennsylvania?
Just this morning, Diane, the Quinnipiac poll from Quinnipiac University came out showing that the Clinton lead in Pennsylvania, which has been as high as 20 points and has generally been in double digits, has shrunk inside of 10 points. Their last poll last week had it at 9. This one has it at 6 percentage points, with Obama gaining more than Clinton losing. So she's still hovering around 50%, but he's climbing up from the high 30s into the 40s. He's doing particularly better among women, although he still trails among women. He has improved his standing there. And pretty much it's an improvement across the demographic board for Obama. Now, it's not huge. It's just a few percentage points. But the trend is clear, and there are some other polls, some tracking polls, smaller sample polls that show the race even closer than this one.
And then, of course, our listeners are going to wonder, what do these polls really matter?
Well, we've seen polls bounce around in other states.
Right.
Generally, the pattern is that as the campaign intensifies and Obama spends a lot of time in a state and runs a lot of ads in the state, and he's certainly doing that in Pennsylvania, outrunning her 3 or 4 to 1 in ads in Pennsylvania, the gap closes. And sometimes 20 points become 10 points, become 5 points, become a virtual tie. Then in the end game, in the last few frames, if you will, the last few innings, she often stiffens up. The voters tend to step back a little bit again, and then in the end game, oftentimes we've seen in the states where she's won, she then reopens a little bit of a lead. We saw that in Ohio, and it wound up being 10 points again after a dynamic that looked a little bit like what we've seen in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. We saw it in Texas. It wound up being 3.5 percentage points.
How well would each candidate have to do there to go forward?
I believe that up to about 10 percentage points or 12 percentage points, a Clinton win in Pennsylvania is already, as they say on Wall Street, priced into the market. That people are expecting that and that it will not give her a huge boost, although she can play it as a huge boost. And it will probably play in the media as a life-saving kind of turnaround, much as Ohio did. On the other hand, if she's down around 5 points or 2 or 3 points, if it's a cliffhanger, if we're waiting for the results past midnight, that's going to make her look weak in a state that she had really had in the bag. And if she were to lose Pennsylvania, I don't see it happening, but if she were to lose it, I think it would be devastating.
Ron Elving, he's Washington editor for National Public Radio. Mike Sokolov, you went back to your own hometown at Levittown, Pennsylvania, to sort of get a sense of the voting attitudes there. Tell us what you found.
Well, I found, first of all, you know, the classic Reagan Democrats.
Describe them.
Well, these are people who are registered Democrat but don't always vote Democrat. And the people I found were people who had lost one union job, had lost another union job, and were sort of cascading down the ladder in a sort of quintessentially working class way, in a way that has happened in a lot of different communities. And, you know, they're making this choice now between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, and later in the later, you know, John McCain in the mix. And I was really focused on Obama and this notion of whether they could turn to him. And because he, in a place like Levittown, is a very exotic figure for reasons beyond his race even. And this is not a town, a community that has always been open to that kind of thing, because change has not benefited them over the last decade or so. Hillary Clinton is a much more familiar, comforting figure, at least for starters, until they know more.
So as you talk to them, I mean, Levittown, as it was established around the country, Levittown's all over the place. I think the first one was in New York. Is
yes.
that correct?
Yes.
Racially, completely separated.
Yes. When I was growing up, and when my parents moved in the 50s, a black person could not buy a home in Levittown.
And that was because of the lease itself.
Well, Levitt would not sell to black people. Although he held himself out as some sort of racial progressive, he said, but my customers will not accept this. And therefore, it became an all-white town of 70,000 some people. It is now still about 98% white still. So it hasn't, by the numbers, it has not changed that much. The question is, how much has it changed in attitude?
Michael Sokolov, he is a contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine. Before that, he was a reporter at the Philadelphia Inquirer and the Philadelphia Daily News. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Amy Lou, talk about the economic challenges that Pennsylvania faces.
Sure. The economy is certainly a big issue for voters during this campaign season, but the economy is not a new issue for Pennsylvanians who live in this large, older industrial state. Outside of the mortgage crisis, which is on the top of minds of many voters, this state has been grappling and the voters are very concerned about the increased global competition that their employers are facing, economic restructuring in the sense of how do we ensure in all these cities and towns throughout the Pennsylvania, how do we replace the loss of manufacturing jobs with new jobs that are going to pay better wages or as good as the wages that we're losing? And unfortunately, what we're seeing in Pennsylvania is as they've lost 200,000 manufacturing jobs in the last decade, the average wage in the state has dropped in recent years. Again, a reflection of the fact that in its place may be a number of lower paying, less secure service jobs in the economy. And then the third issue, which I hear a lot about when I travel throughout the state, is how do we keep and attract and our young and talented workers? How do we grow the next generation of workers in a state that, like many states around the country, are seeing a large portion of their workers retire? And this in Pennsylvania has the second highest number of older Americans in among the 50 states. So there are a number of challenges.
But
here,
at the same time, is there some reason to be optimistic about what's going on there?
Absolutely. There are a large number of assets in this state. People tend to compare Pennsylvania to Ohio. We do think Pennsylvania is quite distinct from the last major primary state that we all watched, in the sense that even though both Ohio and Pennsylvania have sustained some major losses in manufacturing jobs, Pennsylvania has been able to actually see some net gain in employment in the last since 2003. So they have been able to at least protect themselves and even adjust to the changes in the manufacturing sector. At the same time, you know, they've got some strong research universities. They've got some strong assets in the knowledge economy with Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh and UPenn in Philadelphia that really allows them to see some high-tech growth and knowledge-based jobs in those two major sectors. And the last thing I would say, which really distinguishes it a bit from Ohio, is that the eastern part of Pennsylvania, I think people always joke, and in fact, if you look at Carville's famous quote, that we have Philly and Pittsburgh with Alabama in the middle, the reality is that's not true at all. In fact, Pennsylvania has a lot of job centers and urban areas throughout the state. But the one thing I think that sets it apart from Ohio is that the whole eastern portion of Pennsylvania, if you think about York and Lancaster, even Harrisburg, going up the eastern seaboard up to Philly, Allentown area, and up to Scranton, this is actually the growing parts of the state because they're benefiting from the growth of the I-95 corridor, the job opportunities in the Washington-Baltimore area. So actually, we've got a growing part of the economy in Pennsylvania, which you don't see as strongly in Ohio.
But is Levittown participating in that strong growth, Mike?
Well, I guess it depends. You know, what I saw was people with jobs, but not the kind of jobs they once had. People who worked in the steel mill, even the steel mill itself, the U.S. steel mill, back in the 60s, 70s, you know, people were making $40,000, $50,000 a year then. Some of them are making less than that now. So even in real dollars, you know, others are non-union truck drivers. They're stocking shelves at Target. So Amy would know much better than I how you count jobs and how you measure growth. But what I saw was people who had not only had lesser jobs, but it's not like you have to tell them that. I mean, they feel it, you know, very directly. They feel that they're not making what their parents made. They're not making what they made. And I think they're very frightened because these are people who are 50 years old, who don't have a great education. There's nowhere to go, maybe.
Michael Sokolov, he's contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine. And earlier, Amy Liu, she's deputy director for the Metropolitan Policy Program at the Brookings Institution. Short break. We'll be right back. And here's an email from Sarah, who says, as a voter in central Pennsylvania, I find myself wondering how much support Hillary Clinton would have if Bill Clinton were not a part of the package. When Barack Obama came to our area to speak a couple of weeks ago, our local newspaper ran two large photos above the fold, one Barack Obama and another of Bill Clinton, who preceded his visit by a couple of days. What do you make of that, Ron?
I don't see how you could separate Bill and Hillary as a package at this point. She obviously came into politics with Bill Clinton. She was a very large part of his success. I think that will be one of the stories that biographers try to parse for decades and generations, how much this was a partnership right from the beginning in terms of their political work and their policy work, and they do seem to be almost two halves of the same political brain. So it's very hard to say how they would separate, but clearly she would not have been elected to the Senate in New York if she had not been the wife of the President of the United States. She wouldn't have had access to all the assets that were brought to bear in that election, and that, of course, then builds to her current campaign. Now, on the other hand, having said that, he has also been something of an incubus for her. He has been a burden for her. I think he hurt her badly in North Carolina. I think he's hurt her badly in the African-American community by some of the tactics that he's chosen to employ in trying to hold down the Barack Obama phenomenon, which with all his political acumen, he did not see coming and did not understand.
Ron, how important is Pennsylvania to the Democrats broadly this year?
Hard to see the Democrats having any chance of winning the White House without Pennsylvania. They need to win all the states that John Kerry did in 2004 and all the states that Al Gore did in 2000. There are a couple of states that aren't in common between those two elections. They need to win them all. And if they are going to have any shot without, say, Florida, which looks pretty tough for them this year, they're probably also going to have to win Ohio. But you don't even care about Ohio if you lose Pennsylvania.
How well do the issues that are important in Pennsylvania play across the country?
In certain demographics, I think they're the critical issues. And Mike's talked about this. Amy's talked about this. The aspirations of Americans that have been lost in the not just the most recent downturn. This is just really the last 15 minutes of their economic bad news. It's been going on for more than a generation. It really starts back in the 1950s. It starts at the peak for Pennsylvania when they were really riding high. And those kinds of issues, I think, affect Americans in all 50 states.
Ron Elving, he is Washington editor for National Public Radio. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Mike, looking at the race factor in Levittown, as you saw it, I wonder how large an issue that is across the state.
You know, it's the hardest thing to know, even when you're out there reporting. Governor Rendell, you know, said, you know, there are people in my state who are not ready to vote for an African-American, and he was harshly criticized. And I think he was criticized because that was seen, he's a Hillary Clinton partisan, and he was seen as trying to gain her an edge. But I don't think anybody disagrees that there are people who will not vote for an African-American. We just don't know how many or who they are because they don't tell you overtly. Certainly when I was growing up in Levittown, same as many other kinds of communities, there were people who I cannot imagine going into the voting booth and casting a vote for somebody like Barack Obama. I think there's plenty of that still out there, but it's mixed in with economic insecurity. It's mixed in with being afraid to change. It's mixed in with things that aren't purely racial. And it's very difficult to separate out. I don't think anybody can put a percentage on how many people just won't cast that vote. But I think the interesting thing for Democrats is they are Democrats. I mean, many of these people are Democrats, and Barack Obama can win the nomination without their votes, but it's hard to imagine him winning in November without, you know, most of these core Democratic votes.
Amy Lou, Mike has talked about the economic issues, the importance of the economic issues in Levittown, and you've talked about them across the state. To what extent do you think the candidates are speaking to those core economic issues about which voters are concerned?
Well, I think if you look at all three of the presidential candidates right now, all of them have rolled out an economic plan for the country with quite a few diverse ideas, including how to address the mortgage crisis that is quite imminent right now. Our concern, though, and a lot of the work that we have done in Pennsylvania and around the country is whether the candidates are talking about the assets of the economy that are needed to help these big industrial states and many of their job centers transform, adapt, and prosper in today's global economy. The four assets that we talk about and many local and state people talk about is innovation, infrastructure and roads, bridges, including broadband, human capital, the skills of our workforce and the future workforce, and the quality of place, because quality of places matter to attract and retain our firms and workers today. And the question is, and the second point is that most of these assets are solely highly concentrated in many of the job centers in Pennsylvania and in many places around the country. And the question is, are our candidates speaking to both those issues? They certainly have issue papers. on those issues, but is it at the forefront of their speeches? And I think the issue is we'd like to hear more. You can travel in almost any major economic center in the country, and they worry about traffic congestion. Pennsylvania is a major transportation trucking corridor. Freight traffic in the country is going to double. We have bridges and roads that are in desperate need of repair. And particularly in, if you think about the growth on the Eastern Corridor, the future of Allentown area, the future of the Scranton area, the future of Philadelphia is really dependent on its ability to have access to reliable high-speed rail or a good Amtrak system to connect it to the rest of the I-95 corridor. And again, do we hear enough from our candidates around these things that really are the assets of the economy and would help all of these places adapt to the changes that we all see?
Here is an email from Ruth, who says Democratic registration is skyrocketing. Young people use cell phones and are new voters. I thought most pollsters interviewed likely voters. Does this skew the results? Ron?
Possibly. But pollsters are not unaware of these trends. And pollsters are enormously interested in accuracy and representativeness. I know that many people don't feel that way about pollsters, and they see them strictly as partisans or as agents of some kind. Most pollsters, the best ones, the ones we try to look at, the academic ones, the nonpartisan ones, want to be right. They know about cell phones. They all carry them. And they are trying to devise ways to poll people on cell phones, and the best ones are finding good ways to do it. Also, while it is true that there is an increase in turnout and an increase in registration for Democrats all over the country, and it's true also in Pennsylvania, out of the universe that you're talking about in a big state, 4 million Democrats or self-identified Democrats in Pennsylvania, about half of them may be going to take part in this, an increase of 10,000 or 20,000 in registration, unless it all votes literally for one candidate, is probably not going to make that big a difference. And it certainly can be captured by most forms of polling, even those that look at likely voters.
Mike.
Well, I think that the registration that's taken place, which is over 200,000, I think, in Pennsylvania, I think there are some people feeling that has changed, at least in the primary, the universe of voters. And Neil Oxman, who is Governor Rendell's political strategist and knows Pennsylvania as well as anyone, you know, he thought that 2/3 of that registration goes to Obama in this primary and felt that that changes the math. And I think that may change the math in such a way that, you know, the margin may be under the magic 10% or whatever it is. But there has been, you know, a tremendous number of new registration. In Bucks County, which Levittown is a part of, and Montgomery County and other suburban county around Philadelphia, are for the first time in memory now majority Democratic registrations, which is for people around there. I mean, you sort of know in your mind, oh, well, Bucks County and Montgomery County, those are Republican counties.
And,
well, no more.
And, of course, you mentioned Governor Rendell. How does his endorsement of Hillary Clinton and, pardon me, how does Senator Casey's endorsement of Barack Obama, what kind of difference does that make, if any?
Well, certainly it makes a difference. I mean, Rendell's endorsement is big, and he brings an organization, but he brings the kind of organization, I think, of people who show up at the polls as workers, you know, election after election, and some of them are good, and some of them are just there to collect their walking around money, as it's called. How passionate they are, it's not clear. But clearly, Rendell's endorsement is huge. And Bob Casey's endorsement was certainly symbolically huge. He's not considered to have the same kind of organization that Rendell does, but he was certainly a great traveling and bowling buddy for 5 or 6 days while Senator Obama went around Pennsylvania.
What do you think, Ron? Do these endorsements in states as key as Pennsylvania really matter?
Yes, sometimes. Ted Strickland in Ohio, I think, was critical to the success of the Clinton campaign there. He really did help her dominate in the portions of Ohio, southern Ohio, that are most like, say, Kentucky, which might be said for certain portions of Pennsylvania. The irony in Pennsylvania is that the statewide politician you would look to appeal to those parts of the state would be Bob Casey, not Ed Rendell, who's much more Philadelphia-based, much more in the 40% of the state that's down in southeastern Pennsylvania, and whose voter demographic, the kind of people who voted for him for governor two times, looks much more like the Obama voters than Bob Casey's voter demographic, which looks much more like the Hillary Clinton voters. So there's a big irony there that may tend to cancel out some of their effect.
And how does the Mark Penn issue figure into this whole thing? His meeting with Colombian officials about the Colombia Free Trade Agreement, when President Bush is really pushing for that, and yet Hillary Clinton has been against that, and here Mark Penn is negotiating on the side, or at least speaking on the side, representing his own firm of Barsteller McCabe.
Well, I don't know, you know, what the awareness of most voters is of that, but certainly if it's framed as that she's really, you know, a money person, not a change person, that she's, you know, mixing with people who have different interests than the working class, you know, then it's a big deal. If it's just that she lost her consultant, I don't think it's a big deal at all.
At 27 before the hour, you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. And joining us now from Pittsburgh is Dan Onorato. He's chief executive of Allegheny County, which is home to the 1.2 million people of Pittsburgh, plus 129 smaller towns. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
Are you happy about all this attention Pennsylvania is getting in the primary campaign?
I think it's great for the voters of Pennsylvania having a spirited debate and having two great candidates talking about issues. And I want to be clear from the beginning, obviously I endorsed Senator Clinton, but I think a hotly contested primary with this much time is good. Since when is a competitive primary a bad thing for democracy? I think the voters of Pennsylvania are getting a real treat here to see the candidates up close and in person and able to ask questions and listen to answers. So I think it's very positive.
And what are the key issues you want to see these candidates focus on for the voters of Pennsylvania?
Well, the key issues for us in Pennsylvania, and particularly southwestern Pennsylvania, where I'm from, and one of the reasons why I'm endorsing and I endorsed Senator Clinton, is that there needs to be a federal policy for reinvesting back in America, particularly the metropolitan areas. I've been governing now for a little over 4 years, and I have a close relationship with the governor, and the state has a reinvestment policy that's worked very well to clean our brownfields and to clean our old industrial sites and to put the infrastructure where we need it and the repair infrastructure. If we had a federal program, that would be very helpful. I also think the federal government needs to reinvest in its people, making sure that individuals have a right, and not a right, but an ability to go to college, and not let income prohibit somebody that has the brains to get to college, to reinvest in our trade schools for the young people that are not going to college, that they are being given a trade and a skill. We've got away from all that. And it's time that the federal government once again has a serious policy of reinvesting in its people and in its regions. And I think that's good for the economy. I think Senator Clinton gets that.
And suppose she doesn't show as well as you'd like to see her do in Pennsylvania, then what?
Well, the Democrats will unite. Coming out of that convention, whoever is the nominee, we are going to unite behind our candidate, and I think you're going to see a big difference between the Republican candidate and the Democratic candidate as it relates to what is the role of the federal government. And at that point in time, I will be working for the Democratic nominee, because I believe it's very important that we get somebody in the White House right now that understands this reinvestment policy.
And as a Democrat, what do you think it's going to take for the Democratic nominee to win in your area come November?
Well, I think if the Democratic nominee is willing to talk about these issues and have specific ideas of how to deal with the reinvestment and how to deal with getting people to the middle class and improving the middle class and dealing with health care, dealing with jobs and the economy, they're the bread and butter issues in Pennsylvania. Whoever has the better plan, they're going to carry the state.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us from Pittsburgh.
Well, thank you, too.
Dan Onorato is chief executive of Allegheny County. And turning to you now, Ron Elving, how many Clinton voters would back Obama in the general election, do you think?
I think the overwhelming majority of them will. But there will be a substantial number who will not. Now, we have a lot of polling already on this, and one of the polls that's being widely cited is a Gallup poll showing that 28% of her current supporters would vote for John McCain if Barack Obama were the Democratic nominee. We also have polls that show about 18-19% of Obama's supporters would vote for McCain. Now, that is a truly hypothetical. All polls are hypothetical, except exit polls. But in this particular instance, I think you have to look back at previous campaigns. And in 2000, a lot of Bill Bradley supporters said they'd never vote for Al Gore and vice versa. Didn't turn out that way.
Ron Elving, he's Washington editor for National Public Radio. When we come back, we'll hear from an Obama supporter in Pennsylvania. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, helping to build a more just future for the nation and the world at macfound.org. By the Annenberg Foundation, advancing public well-being through improved communication, on the web at annenbergfoundation.org. And by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, supporting Games for Health, using video games to promote health innovations at rwjf.org/pioneer. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Millions of Americans have bipolar disorder, a mental illness that can cause dramatic mood swings. An award-winning journalist and best-selling author offers a very personal account of living with a disease that brings her tremendous highs and withering lows. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And joining us now is Democratic Congressman Patrick Murphy of Pennsylvania's 8th District that covers Bucks County, including Levittown and a sliver of Northeast Philadelphia. Good morning to you, sir. Thanks for joining us.
Diane, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm a big fan.
Thank you. Is the extended primary campaign in Pennsylvania focusing on the correct issues, in your view?
I do. You know, you look at, you know, Senator Obama and Senator Clinton, but specifically Senator Obama, his first event in Pennsylvania to kick off his campaign was in my district at an old U.S. steel mill plant, which is basically shut down. It became an economic and environmental brownfield. But it's now a green energy hub for the whole East Coast. There at that site, where there used to be 10,000 employees, are now thousands of employees that have green-collar manufacturing jobs, such as at the Gamesa Wind Power Plant, making wind turbines that they ship all over North America. such as A-Polysilicon, which actually manufactures their solar panels. And actually, Diane, the fourth largest solar panel field in the whole United States of America. And he did that purposely to say, listen, we all know we need to wean ourselves off the foreign oil, the $25 billion that we give to the Middle East. And we do that by investing in renewable energy, these green collar manufacturing jobs, which is so important. So I think he's talking about the right issues, about good jobs. He talks about bringing troops home from Iraq and about making health care more affordable to everybody.
And in this hour, we've heard from a native of Levittown, Mike Sokolov, who says that Obama has a very tough road to hoe there. Do you disagree with that?
Well, there's no doubt about that, Diane. I think Mike was his column this week in the New York Times was a terrific piece. And he does have he is the underdog in this race. Barack Obama was down 33 points just a few months ago. He's consistently, you know, got it closer and closer and closer. And in fact, today the Quinnipiac University just came out with a poll that shows he's only 6 points down. But what's more important is not what the poll numbers say, but the spirit on the ground and the incredible grassroots campaign that Senator Obama has been able to establish in Pennsylvania and all across the United States. There is no doubt in my mind that the reason why over 300,000 new voters have registered to become Democrats so they can vote in April 22nd is because of what Barack Obama speaks about. He is inspiring people who have never been involved in politics before to get involved, and it's a wonderful thing for our country. It's a wonderful thing for the Democratic Party, and it's a wonderful thing for me to be part of.
And the question becomes, which is the more pressing issue to your constituents, do you think? Is it the war or is it economic insecurity?
I think they go hand in hand, Diane. In fact, you know, most Americans believe what I believe, in that, you know, I had the opportunity to serve in the military. I was a paratrooper in the 82nd Airborne Division. I was actually in Iraq back in 2003, and I suffered through Baghdad in 138-degree heat, and we lost 19 men in my unit that never made it home. But the fact is that although our population, our constituents in Pennsylvania across the country want to bring the troops home, they also are concerned about the economic insecurity of spending $3 trillion for the Iraq war. And that's what the top economists say that this war is going to cost. And it's going to cost even more unless we call for phased redeployment of our troops in a responsible way, which Barack Obama has called for.
One last question for you, Congressman. I gather your wife is a Republican. I understand you got her to switch registrations for the primary.
That's correct. I am. My wife worked for Bob Dole. She voted for George Bush twice. She says the Republican Party left her. She didn't leave the Republican Party. And she is enthusiastically supporting Barack and Michelle Obama. She thinks they are terrific. She believes that they're the Kennedys of this generation. And she is fired up and ready to go, as they say.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, Congressman Patrick Murphy of Pennsylvania's 8th District. Thanks again.
Thanks, Diane. Have a great day.
Thank you. And we'll open the phones now, 800-433-8850. First to Fairfield, Connecticut. Good morning, Barbara. You're on the air.
Good morning. I will be very brief.
All right.
I have a 14-year-old daughter, an 18-year-old son, obviously of voting age, strident Obama supporters. And I had a very interesting question and reservation from them. I'll take my answer off the air.
Sure.
One of the most, they're hesitating, or my daughter, if she could vote, and my son, who will be voting, hesitating for him. And this is how they put it. I am so afraid he will be assassinated. And I didn't have an answer.
I understand. Mike Sokolov, any thoughts?
Well, certainly you hear that. You don't often hear it expressed, you know, publicly, because it's a very uncomfortable subject. But all I can say is she's not the first person I've heard raise that.
Ron Elving.
It is a fear, of course, around any candidate, It is especially a fear around any particularly charismatic candidate where the emotion level gets quite high, and that then seems to, in some sense or another, inspire this kind of nefarious response among some. And then when you add in, of course, the race factor, that is going to make people particularly fearful. In fact, many black people have said over the course of this campaign that it is a deep fear for them, some of them even hesitating to vote for him. But the decision, obviously, here is the decision of the Obama family and not really of anyone else. And they have chosen to have courage in this particular fashion, and they have asked people to have the courage to stand with them in that decision.
Now to Portsmouth, Virginia. Good morning, Betty. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
There's a question about the Democratic Party healing itself and coming together behind whoever the nominee is. I voted for Hillary Clinton in the primary in Virginia with every intention that I would vote for Barack if he was the nominee. However, in recent weeks and based on the news, and I've taken a much better look at McCain. And I feel that the women of this country will be faced with a choice come November, and that choice will be McCain or Barack, and McCain will win.
That's very interesting. What do you think, Amy?
Well, I'm certainly not a political commentator, but I can speak from a personal position as a female, and from hearing other folks who are female supporters of Hillary Clinton and others, that there is an attractiveness to Senator McCain. And what I often hear is actually the issue around leadership is the factor that would make Senator McCain stand out, is what makes Senator McCain and Hillary at least very similar in their minds, is their ability to lead. And I know there's also male supporters of Senator Clinton who think because of the positions on the war that they would, if Barack was the nominee, that they would look even more closely at Senator McCain. So I think the sentiments of your caller is certainly not a unique one.
Is that what the polls indicate, Ron Elving?
John McCain is running ahead of either of the two Democrats in many, many states, including many of the states that would be crucial for the Democrats to take away, such as Florida and Ohio, although he has been very close in Ohio to the two Democratic candidates. I don't think we'll really see the true matchup between McCain and either person until we know who the other is, who the Democrat candidate is. But I also think that John McCain is a special kind of Republican. He is probably the closest thing they could get to the anti-George Bush, even though he agrees with him on all the important issues. People see him as being other than George Bush, and so they will have some plausibility in declaring independence from the Bush administration in running this November.
Mike Sokolow.
Well, it's hard to know what the caller was exactly talking about, but I think that there's sometimes a sense that Barack Obama is right on the line between confidence and smugness or cockiness, and that could be something that women are particularly attuned to if he crosses that line.
All right, to Long Island, New York. Good morning, John. Thanks for joining us.
Hi there.
Hi.
I believe one thing I'm hearing from your guests is that basically they're missing the one critical factor in this campaign. I am a Democrat. I support Clinton's policies. I support Obama's policies. I would very happily vote for either one of them. But when I look at what's going on here, when I look at the polls, the one thing I see is Hillary's and Clinton's polarizing effect of the middle or the non-committed independent voters. Barack Obama seems to be the only candidate from the Democratic side that could actually attract those candidates and has a chance of beating McCain in the general election. I feel like the Democrats are sort of poised to potentially nominate someone that can't win. And if you look at the polls across the independents in the middle of the U.S., you see that only Obama stands a chance of beating McCain. McCain trounces Hillary when you look at those independent voters.
So those independent voters will play a key role.
True. And Barack Obama is someone who has appealed to independents. John McCain is someone who has appealed to independents. So if that's the way it winds up, Obama versus McCain, you will have both parties nominating the person who has the most cross-party and extra-party appeal into the middle, into the independents. But there are still a lot of people in this country who believe that the way you win national elections is by turning out your base and making sure you've got your full
and
base.
And isn't that where John McCain has his problems?
It is, but it's also where Hillary Clinton has her strength. So if the Democrats eventually decide that they're going to go with Hillary Clinton, if the superdelegates go in that direction, it will be largely because they think she would be better at turning out a unified Democratic base, assuming, of course, that she could get Obama's voters by putting him on the ticket.
Mike.
Well, I guess the question that I would have about that is when you're with the Obama forces and you see them doing this very painstaking work of converting, you know, people to Democrats and you know, registering, you know, they think that they're changing the universe of voters. And I guess what Ron's saying is, well, let's wait and see. And I think we will have to wait and see. I mean, it's you know, it's really a mathematical equation. If he really has expanded the universe, then, you know, he may need less of that base. But we can't know that right now.
To Chapel Hill, North Carolina, welcome to the program, Ruth.
Yes, thank you very, very much. I am 81 years old and have voted ever since I was 21. I have voted for all the presidential elections. What is appalling now is the way in which the whole campaign is being conducted. I dislike name-calling. I dislike drumming up old business and so forth. I wish they would tell us what their programs are precisely. What I'm most interested in is there are going to be vacancies on the Supreme Court in the next 4 to 8 years. Who are they in favor of as far as a Supreme Court appointees? And I am also interested in cabinet members because I recall the Kennedy election. People were very wary, but Kennedy put in a very fine cabinet.
Ruth, thank you for your call and for your strong feelings about your participation as a voter. At 7 minutes before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Have we gotten any indication or even inclination from any of these three candidates, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, or John McCain, as to their ideas about Supreme Court appointees or cabinet members? Ron Elving.
John McCain has indicated that he admires the conservatives on the current court. He would include here John Roberts, the new chief. He would include the also recently added Justice Alito. But he is not quite as adamant about the Scalia connection and the Clarence Thomas connection as some of the other Republicans who had been running. So there might be just a tiny bit of daylight there, but basically he would be going for the kind of judges that George W. Bush appointed. Now, the Democrats have indicated that they would appoint the kind of people that Bill Clinton appointed in the 1990s. That is certainly what Hillary Clinton would identify herself with, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Stephen Breyer, people of that nature and order. There have also been some other names tossed around. George Mitchell's name comes back up. He's certainly a person with a Democratic pedigree, but he's also a former federal judge. He did that before he was a United States senator. So his name comes up as well.
And, of course, George W. Bush at this point has very low approval ratings. The question becomes, how might that affect voters' decisions in this primary in Pennsylvania? Mike.
Well, I certainly think that in the general, you know, in the primary, it's hard to know. I mean, you know, most of the voters are angry at Republican policies. They're angry at Bush. I think it's sort of a wash. You know, in the general election, whatever the base may find distasteful about either Senator Clinton or Senator Obama, their answer, I think, is, well, it's me or 4 more years of what has not been working for you.
Amy.
Well, I was going to respond back to the caller's comment, which is, I think many of us thought that given the unprecedented nature of this election season, the first time we've had no incumbent president or vice president running for office since 1952, that we would have an issues campaign. And I think that the voter represents a number of Americans that if this race continues through July 1 as Howard Dean says, or to the convention, can we use the remaining time with the remaining debates to focus on a whole slew of issues that have yet to be brought to the American voter, whether it's about climate change, whether it is about the Supreme Court. I think there's a number of issues we have still not have heard enough of from the candidates. So I think she raises a very good point.
I fully agree. And, you know, so often listeners say, I don't want to hear about the horse race. I want to hear about the issues. But there is enough ambiguity in what the candidates have to say, which almost forces us in the end to focus on the horse race. And as Pennsylvania draws near, we shall see if after that we do get a clearer idea of where these candidates stand. Amy Liu of the Brookings Institution, Ron Elving of National Public Radio, Michael Sokolov, contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Diane.
And thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Tanya Weinberg, and Emmanuel Tui. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Anisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts.